Hey guys, welcome to episode 30 of the JV Club. We did it. We made it to 30. I look at my friends who have hundreds of episodes under their belts, and I'm so in awe of them, and I can't wait to get there with you guys and look back at all the amazing women that I will have had by then. I'm so, so honored and grateful to have had the 30 amazing women that I've released so far. So I say I released them like I released doves into the open sky from some sort of a chapel. But I hope you enjoy episode 30 with Jen Finnegan. She's one of my favorite people. She's so funny and so warm. She's done a ton of drama, but she's also an extremely accomplished comedic actress. And she's also just an amazing human being. So we had a lovely time podcasting together. I want to remind everyone that I am doing a live JV Club on October 13th on Saturday at 3 p.m. in Santa Monica. You can go to the LA Podcast Festival website for that information. I'll post that on Facebook as well. I'm sorry, I've been a little behind on that. Speaking of being behind, I need to catch up on my shout outs. I'm going to give some and I'll have to catch up on them next week. But Stephanie Y and Christina E and the Pro Bending Club and Lucy and Ryan M and Nick A, Veronica C, Nissa, Zachary L, Shannon T all sent me beautiful emails. So did Joanna C. And then via Twitter, Tahel, Clem, Julietta, John C., West Anthony, Megan C., Tone of Echoes, Steve K., thanks as always for your wonderful tweets. Again, I am behind in catching up on some of these, so more thanks to come. I didn't have a chance to grab info from the Nerdist page. I'm recording this at HuffPost Live, and just wanted to get it out there to you guys. So, but thank you, as always. I didn't receive any criticisms of the kind of Frank Mormon discussion that I had with Kara Santa Maria. I hope none of you were offended by it. I do so value your feedback, and I am signing off now to welcome you to enjoy this conversation with Jen Finnegan, guys. Thanks a million!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, I'm going to start out by saying that it's rare that I do this in an evening, and I'm wondering if it's
really
going to change the vibe of the podcast, because usually it's just so happened that almost every single one I've ever recorded has been during the day. I am hard-pressed to think of another one that's taken place at night.
Wow, I'm honored.
I know. I want to bring something special to that.
Should we put on our nighttime voices?
Should we put on our late night... There's no way not to make
smoking.
That Cinemax.
I'm sitting in a room that a cat was in, so I am going to get naturally
you
gravelly.
Are a little, I know. I forgot that you were allergic. How many times have you been to my house and I still forget that you're allergic to Luca?
14.
Wow, you've been really,
I really
keeping
don't know.
Out. But yeah, it's a muggy evening. I don't know when it turned so muggy in Los Angeles, but lately it's been feeling very East Coast.
It's muggy.
It's very moist. Nobody likes
God,
that word.
When you say moist after 9 p.m., it's really, it could go somewhere so interesting.
There are so many words that I would normally feel very comfortable using during the day, but they seem super off limits right now. But yeah, we're here in the evening. We're in the same spot, guys. I don't want you to worry. Things haven't been changed up too much. It's just a matter of the hour. But it is after a work day at HuffPost Live. Did you shoot today?
Or did I you did shoot not tomorrow? Today. I was a day off. I shoot tomorrow.
I'm with Jennifer Finnegan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hi.
You've read the description, so you guys are one step ahead of both of us. You already knew before we even said. But she and I have known each other for years.
Yeah,
we can say
years.
That now. We are
<It's>
neighbors. she is married to the delightful Jonathan Silverman, and he is
delightful.
He is an absolute
he worked
delight
on my show today.
Oh, he did.
He did. They like
I
to work him.
It's all in the
when
family.
I'm not working.
That's probably a good idea.
They're trying to keep us apart.
You guys are so cute together, and you've been together for such a long time. It's a total joy.
Well, you just see us when we're cute together.
Well, that's true. are still so cute together.
Oh, thanks.
And Johnny and I were, we played a couple in a pilot for ABC a few years ago. And so I already had met them because they were neighbors. So we had said hello in the neighborhood.
Didn't we meet the first time we met? I remember
so we
exactly.
Were getting a Christmas tree
lot. Yeah.
That's a good place to meet her for the first time.
And I thought she's so delightful. And then we met again when you played Johnny's wife.
And we met once on the street, too, because the house, my house is sort of in a broad intersection. And I think you guys were driving by or something, and we said hello. And I just liked your moxie.
Yeah,
I like the cut of your jib. And then when we met, when we were shooting the ABC pilot, we were like, oh, we love each other.
Yeah.
And so then we became friends.
And then we started doing potlucks.
We started doing potlucks.
Potluck slash catchphrase game night.
Game night.
Oh, so good. I want to do it right now.
I do too. I love it. We could play cat. Wait, I guess that's hard with some people. Yeah. I was totally willing.
It also may not translate to a podcast.
You never know. You never know unless you try and until you try. But I don't even have it in front of me, so I'm not going to do it. The potlucks are so fun. It's one of the things that it was just a small group of us, and it still exists. We had to take some time off because everyone got so busy.
Yeah.
But
one of the things I actually loved about you was the first time we did it. First of all, that we actually did do it, because I think people, especially in this town, have this habit of always good intentions.
I mean?
Yeah. You meet someone that you like and then you exchange numbers and then you say, let's do something. We'll have a potluck. And it never happens.
Yes.
But we actually got our, can I swear on this?
Yeah.
We got our shit together and we did it. And what I loved is I remember coming in the first time and you like had a tablescape, like you had a theme.
I meant it.
Oh man, you
I
like brought
was
your
that
A
when
game.
I printed out the menu. The first, I think that was
you
like the
printed
second
out the menu, dude. Okay, and then you had like
put it in a picture frame.
You had like paper lanterns, and it was like this whole like really Domino magazine feature story.
I mean,
is there still a Domino magazine?
You know what? There isn't, but they just put out
a
special issue, and I snapped it right up. Domino quick fixes.
I'm really relevant. See how relevant I am?
Oh
yes. Right back
Domino was a great magazine. We were all devastated when it went away, except for you, because you don't read it and you thought it might still exist.
Yeah, apparently. But you took it so seriously, and you just like, I remember you made like these amazing baked chickpeas, and then you put like chili powder on mangoes, and I was like, this girl is my jam. Like that.
I know.
Because
well,
that's what
you
I do.
Was fantastic. Yeah, I had no way of knowing.
Because I take it really seriously, and I was like, oh my God, because a lot of my friends now, a disclaimer, half of them take it really seriously and, you know, go like through Bon Appetit for the recipe, but the other half stop at, you know, Gelson's and get microwavable meat.
Right.
So, I'm not kidding. A friend of mine actually brought nukeable meat to a dinner party.
What kind of meat?
It was like a package of slabs of meat that you put in the
microwave. That is like a dirty trick to play on someone if you go to a potluck.
Thanksgiving.
That's so dreadful. What a letdown.
I know.
And then when you had it at your house.
Oh, yeah.
You made a beautiful salmon that was like cooked on cedar, and we were up on the deck, and it was beautiful.
No.
And you made homemade everything you made was like homemade. I think you made some hummus or something.
Yeah,
some sort of,
it was, I think it was overwhelming. I think it was maybe sometimes
fantastic.
I go too far.
I do not remember being overwhelmed.
Okay,
I remember
good.
Being beautifully whelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed, I can guarantee you that. So we do these potlucks. Yeah. And it's just one of those joyful things about Los Angeles. Like when the magic of Los Angeles sort of clicks in, just to your point about it's like always out there. The potential for it is always out there because there are so many amazing people here.
Yeah.
But you get swept up in the sort of like not so great things about LA. And so when you have these opportunities for these like pockets of time with people that come to mean so much to you, it feels, it just feels like it feeds you and you feel strengthened by it. And and it's great. I can live off of that for like months at a time.
Yeah. And you know what? It's true. Cause we will go months without seeing each other. Yeah. But then when we do, it's like there's nothing else I want to hear about what's been going on with you.
Yeah.
And I think I'm at a phase, and I'm assuming, in fact, I know you're at a phase where, you know, I just want the people in my life to feed me, to feed my soul in a way.
Yeah.
And so even if I don't see them every day, it's such a luxury when we do see each other. It's like it grounds me a little bit, a lot.
Yeah. I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. And you travel so much. You're in, you,
yeah.
You guys have a little place in New Orleans that you got for a song that's indeed. Just been this great place for you to kind of get away.
Yeah.
And you guys, that's the other thing that I love about you guys is that you're just great travelers. You just get out there and you see the world. And
yeah, we don't stop. I mean, at times we, like this summer, we look back and we realize I think we spent like 3 weeks at home this summer. And
yeah,
you were,
that's why we never see
May
each other, because you're gone all
September.
The time, or I'm gone. Yeah. Or somebody's, yeah.
Yeah. We just are nomads. We pick up and go. And if we know we have a week, you know, free, we'll just plan something. We're adventurers. And
you're my role model for that. For sure.
Really?
Oh, God.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. I don't know. There's something about, well, first of all, we have been together a long time. And I feel like that's a, you know, it really does keep it fresh because you're experiencing all these new things together. And so you're building stories and you're building a history.
Yes.
And it just kind of layers a relationship. And then for me, like, I'm restless. I'm a restless soul, you know.
Have you always been?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even from when you were little?
Yeah,
I have. Well, let's use that as a segue. Where were you born? And then where were you kind of a teenager?
Born and a teenager in Montreal.
Okay.
Montreal, Quebec,
and
Canada.
So was French your first language and English second language, or everything all at once?
My mom is French Canadian. Marie Diane Huguette-Rioux is her name.
Bravo.
And that whole side of the family is really, really French. I'm not very close with them. But my dad's side, my dad never spoke a word.
The dog is acting like
sorry.
Something's going on.
Did he do that a lot?
I don't know. He hears the neighbors and he often thinks things are closer.
Okay.
This is just a scene from
all
a horror
of a sudden
movie.
It gets spooky.
Oh my God, it did.
He's in the living room.
No, he's like interested. He gets really interested in case. He gets interested like if there are animals rustling around and stuff.
I'm easily scared.
I know. I'm so sorry. It just all of a sudden he was so alert and he just like jumped up. And all of a sudden I thought we are recording at night and now it has become like the haunted podcast.
And Janet, for the record, Janet has these like big, beautiful, expressive eyes. I just saw this flash of like fear and just this sort of like, that was like serious horror movie moment.
So I'm sorry that I scared you. I just had that moment where I was like, let's make sure everything's cool. I have a guest here. Like, I don't need a raccoon or a skunk spraying near the door of my dog.
Also,
like,
she lives in the forest,
the
in a log cabin.
I live in a little bit of a forest. Listen, I looked out my window. I was in my closet, and the way that it worked out.
I'm about to go to your closet and lock myself in.
I know, don't, because there's a window there, and this is where it happened.
Oh, God.
In my closet, I think I had the light off because I was just getting something, and I looked up in the window, and exactly where my own face reflection should be,
no.
There was a raccoon.
Oh God!
Just sitting in the ivy, and because the ivy goes up the back of my house, like there's a hill right behind my house.
Jesus.
So he was sitting up in the ivy, like far away. But he was buried up to his head in the ivy, so there was just this floating raccoon face staring at me so interestedly, like curious, and we just had sort of a moment together after I pissed myself.
I'm sure the last thing you want to see when you're changing in your closet is a pair of eyes staring at you, whether human or animal.
It was definitely kind of a scary moment, and then I was delighted because I do get excited about animals, even skunks. Two skunks. I don't know if I've told the story. It's not really a story, but on the podcast before. But there was a period of time when skunks made sweet, sweet love in my backyard. And I heard like a weird squeaking and rustling. And I looked out the window and I was like, oh.
Wow, really? Like
gross.
Full on Nat Geo style?
Yeah.
You're like Snow White. They just find you.
I charm them into falling in love with each other.
But you're like X-rated Snow White. They just come around you and they watch you change. They make love in your backyard. What's happening?
And one time
you're
I
like
woke
Cinemax,
up and a spider
Snow
was on
White.
My stomach, and it was just, a lot of hookups. A lot
I saw two
of animal
lizards
and a lot of human hookups.
And I think they were hooking up on our driveway, but it was really...
I can't believe how seriously you just said,
no, you know
they
why?
Were hooking up. They were... like they were two teenagers.
Oh my God. You guys totally just thought those were totally hooking up. And the reason it was weird and disturbing was that I'm pretty sure the guy lizard was clamping onto the head of the female lizard mm-hmm. while penetration was happening.
All right.
Okay, that's... Like, I took some pictures.
Like back of the neck?
Yeah.
To like, hold her still?
Oh, yeah. Aye, but like yeah, violently.
Nature.
Yeah.
Don't nature. Know. That's yeah, the hookup.
Right? That's the hookup.
Ay, ay, ay. So yeah, so I think we're okay. Nothing... I didn't hear any rustling. He mellowed out. I think he just went over to see what it was about. So we're safe.
Okay.
So
where were we?
We're anything? Going back to Montreal.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Montreal.
Yes. So my mom's French Canadian. My dad did not ever speak one word of French ever his entire life. He was a very famous in Montreal. One of the sort of founders of English radio.
Oh.
His name was Jack Finnegan, and growing up, everybody was always so excited that he was my dad. He had this thing called the Finnegan Quiz, and everyone would call in to the radio station and play the quiz, and he'd give away free, you know, certificates to restaurants and movie premieres. And
that's pretty great.
Yeah. So I grew up in radio. So this is, you know, I'm a giant podcast fan. I listen to podcasts every night of my life.
Love it.
Yeah. It's sort of comforting to me. And whenever he wasn't a good sleeper, I'm not a good sleeper. And I just remember always hearing the radio in hushed tones in the bedroom next door.
But never French music, never French voices.
Oh, no. He never. And Montreal is fully bilingual.
Right.
And actually
like pridefully so, right? Like sometimes aggressively so.
I think aggressively at this point. Yeah. Yeah. For many years. But yeah, it's going back to aggression.
Unfortunately. I've never been there.
I can't believe it. Well, you can't go ashamed. Without me. We have to go together.
Couldn't love that idea more. I'm dying to go. I've been
it's
wanting to
very
go
very hipster. Like I think it's yeah. I think it's the most hipster town I've ever yeah. I'm not very
it's not
hipster.
For lack of wanting to go. It just is not. I've never had every time I've like if the Montreal Comedy Festival isn't going,
I know,
going
on,
I'm working. There's
that.
Always a reason that other people are going and I can't make it.
Yeah.
And then when all of a sudden I'm like, I gotta go, someone's like, it's not the right time of year. So
because it's January.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when
so I just need to make I definitely need to make it more of a priority. I'm a little nervous because I do love the French language and I know I'm not going to understand any of it because I speak like classic French instead
well,
of...
that's okay because they're very forgiving there.
They are?
Yeah. It's not like French from France. I mean, when I go to France, they make fun of me.
I feel like they're so sweet in France
do
to
you?
Me.
They're because so you really nice. Make an effort. Sometimes
but wait a minute.
Nice.
You have a perfect... All they care about is the accent. Like
no,
they love
think
if you have
I'm
accent.
Belgian and I don't think they like Belgians either because
okay.
I have a sort of a neutral French accent. I don't
see.
Speak really hardcore Québécois.
I see.
Or Québécois, as they
Québécois.
Say. It's very cute, but it's a little rough around the edges. But my first language essentially was French because my elementary school, Villa Sainte-Marceline, was taught by very strict French nuns.
Oh, you really had it. You had like a Madeleine.
Oh, yeah.
Experience.
Yeah.
Fully. How much of that did you say? How much of that school was your elementary school only?
That fully French,
yeah,
where they punished us for speaking English during
Ooh,
recess.
La, 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 la,
that
la.
Was 7 years. My first wow. 7 years of schooling. I know. Weird. Like I used to dream in French.
That was the best thing that happened to me when I was an exchange student is the first dream that I had in French. I was like,
and it was fully
I did it.
Yeah. Cuz that's really a sign that you've
really
become completely familiar.
That's all over now. I mean, it's all over now.
No, trust me. Words I forget and I'm like, "Whoa." Ugh. I mean, I need, you know, if I spend a couple of weeks there it all comes back.
Yeah.
But like I said, they're forgiving.
Yeah.
They do this thing called franglais.
Right.
Right. So it's a combo.
So
if you
can
can't
just do whatever you can substitute as needed.
Yeah. Seamlessly thread in and out of English and French. That's they don't
nice.
Care.
That's nice. Yeah. I do want to go for that reason. Maybe just for the franglais, I'd be happy to
yeah.
go.
And the food.
And the food.
Go for the food.
And so elementary school was all French and all nuns. Was your high school, were there boys and girls? Were there
private girls school again?
Private girls. Nuns?
The nun was our headmistress. And there was a convent attached to it and a chapel. But no, the teachers were just
secular.
Well, I'm sure they were mostly. Although, you know what was cool about that school? even though it was a Catholic school, there was every religion, every culture represented in that nice. School. And one of my best friends was Muslim, Greek Orthodox, so many Jews in Montreal. So like I was constantly going to Rosh Hashanah. I was, you know,
yeah.
So I know my tons of Yiddish. It's no wonder I ended up with a Jewish husband.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean like every culture was represented there. So I really, there was.
And every ethnic group as well.
Every ethnic group.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I feel a lot of people, friends of mine who went to private school also were like in this very monochromatic world of Caucasian kids.
But Montreal's not like that. It's such a melting pot. There's like every community is represented. You know, you can even tell just by the restaurant culture there. But it was kind of cool because, you know, the chapel, everybody went to church on Tuesdays, but that was optional, whether or not you were Catholic. And they had to make it optional because a third of the school was not Catholic.
Yeah.
So I love that. And we learned every religion. We didn't just learn Catholicism.
So,
and by the way, I'm a recovering Catholic at this point.
You are. Well, I guess that's a good question, is sort of what your belief system was like when you were in high school. If you felt like you had sort of, if you felt an awareness of the Holy Trinity in that way. And I'm sorry that, I don't mean to sound dismissive about that because that's not how I feel about it. But
well, I if you wanted to be a nun.
You did?
When I was like 7, I clearly remember. I was like, I want to be a nun. Probably 6 or 7. Like I remember that thought for like a solid year. I was really into it, man.
What appealed about it to you? And that makes sense to me, by the way. I'm not surprised by that somehow, but I also don't know.
I think it's what you it know. Is. Well, first of all, it was what was familiar. I mean, especially the French school was, you know, it was religious. I was being taught by nuns, and these are the people you look up to. I mean, oftentimes you look up to your teachers.
Well, at least they were good then. I mean, at least it wasn't like they're wrapped on the knuckles and yelled at and being afraid all the time, right?
So I was afraid most of the time. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know what? Half of them were cool. The other half were just horrible people. unhappy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think I just drifted further and further away from it. And then it just was, you know, in high school, it was kind of there. And then I guess you could say I don't identify with really any of it as much anymore. At all, even.
There's something lovely about, I mean, I know that it's funny because I just podcasted this lovely, lovely girl named Kara Santa Maria, and we had almost the entire conversation was about the fact that we both grew up having to go to Mormon church, even though we weren't really believers.
Wow.
So I won't make this entire episode about Catholicism, but especially not because what I was about to say is the most cliche thing you can say, which is, but there's something really romantic about the rituals of Catholicism. It's so pretty. And
there's something romantic about the rituals from every religion, I think.
You're absolutely right.
And you know what? If you ever told me I couldn't have a Christmas tree, I would be freaking devastated because I turn into scary Christmas lady.
I do. Well, I do too. You've seen my Christmas tree. I don't know.
Well, because you and I are not like shy around the decorations. Like, no, we enjoy a holiday.
On board. There's this Halloween walk that happens that we were just talking about before we started the podcast. There's a Halloween walk that happens in our neighborhood where the neighborhood association closes off certain streets for a 2-hour period. And it's like this very rigorously for the children's safety organized Halloween walk that like families from other neighborhoods come into to participate in, and the people in the houses on along the walk, which mine is and Jen's isn't. We're at the crossroads.
You're the crossroads.
This is basically
like you
like
have a civic
home base almost
duty.
I do
responsibility.
I do. And last year I wasn't around, and I felt so bad that I just put a big table full of candy out anyway.
You should just hire someone to represent your house.
Yeah. I hire a series of workers to just part. Yeah, because it is like a groundswell of people you can't imagine. But the kids are so cute.
Well, didn't you have that neighborhood growing up, like where you would just go to? Almost like when kids are shipped to the sort of good school district. Don't you remember that neighborhood growing up where you would be like, I gotta go there to score the good stuff?
Yes. And I'm trying to remember if I actually had friends who lived in those neighborhoods or if we would just find a way to go there anyway.
Yeah, as happens up here. Full on. Actually, I kind of lived in that neighborhood.
Did you?
Except I was in like the say the very middle class version of that, where I was in, I grew up in apartments.
Yeah.
And actually there's a part of me that, like, all I ever want to do at Halloween is be the girl that answers the doorbell and gives out the candy, because I grew up in apartments. So I never,
you couldn't ever be that person.
And I just remember desperately screaming at the kids down below with a bowl of candy from my balcony. And like throwing candy, but nobody wanted it. And it was, yeah, it was like a very, it was almost like a Mardi Gras gone wrong, like throwing random candy at kids.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm concerned that you might be seriously psychologically scarred.
Of course I am.
This is the kind of intimate stuff that comes out on the JV Club.
It's Thanks very weird. It's only like 10 that. Minutes in and already
we're really talking about my it. Yeah.
Strange neuroses.
Your sad Halloween experience.
She grew up all alone.
Do you like dressing up for Halloween now?
No, not really. But I do like the, I love the people watching.
I do too. And I hate the sort of grown, I don't like, you know, even living in San Francisco in my very early 20s, I tried to sort of get on board for like the Halloween, like the crazy Castro Halloween experience. But number one, crowds, yikes.
Yikes.
Number two, I just, it feels like I am very much more, first of all, no judgment. I love having fun and being a kid, and
yeah.
half of my house hey, is I like a 7-year-old should live
respect
here.
Respect people yeah. that get into it. Totally like I wish I it. Had that gene.
That's not how I want to spend my Halloween, like being drunk with a bunch of people. That's just not how I want to spend my Halloween.
Yeah.
But I do love
dressing up.
Yeah.
Dress like a cat dressed as a cat.
I never went through the like sexy
did
Halloween
you not?
Phase.
I definitely did. Ooh, speaking
did
of the
you?
Nun
I
thing.
I always just wanted to be weird.
2 years
looking.
Ago, I was a hoary nun. So
hey.
I finally became a nun, Mom.
The circle is complete. You took all the great qualities about you, your love of nuns and your whoriness.
That habit went so well with those fishnet tights.
This is it's very easy to picture. Oh, yeah. It's very easy to picture. I always went for like the I didn't get that. I didn't get that you were supposed to be sexy.
It's very just mean the girls. Easy
it's
way
very
out.
Mean girls of me to say this, and I really that really appealed to me in that movie, that Tina Fey movie that
right.
Lindsay Lohan is in, when she says she didn't get the message that like you're supposed to be the slutty version of whatever costume.
She shows
it
up
is.
Like in a rabbit costume. Right?
She's Rachel McAdams is in a rabbit costume, and she's like this horrific vampire blood like fangs, looks terrible and dead.
Yeah,
and, but that was more me. I was always interested in just. I think a lot of the time, this is probably not going to surprise anybody who listens to the podcast, but I feel like a lot of the time I wanted to dress up as like a male character.
Yeah. That's my default too, by the way.
I enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
I do like the sort of gender bending of
Love
that.
It.
And
that's how I like to dress in real life. Like I'm not opposed to a necktie.
For sure. For sure.
Johnny calls me Annie Hall. Like half the time
Love
I get dressed.
It all. Yeah. Love it all. I was, I feel like my most successful version of that was, dressing up as Wesley from The Princess Bride.
Oh, what?
Like with the mask, because I look like him already, guys.
You do
this
not.
Is yes, I do. Here's what's going to happen.
Is that Carrie Elwes?
Yeah. Here's what's going to happen.
You do not
I'm
like
going.
Carrie
yeah,
Elwes.
I do. I am going to have Jules on the Pinterest. We have a Pinterest account, which if you once this episode airs, one of my like my sort of. Fan and friend in New Zealand who I met through the podcast, guys, you've heard this a million times, puts together, but just in case you haven't, if you're a fan of Jen's and you don't know this podcast, she puts together images that represent the things we talk about.
Oh.
So she calls from the internet,
oh my
like
God.
All of these, you know, so there's this wonderful visual collage of all the stuff that we talk about.
Oh.
So there'll be like something from Montreal and like,
oh, it's going to be like twisted Catholic.
There will be a hot nun.
Yeah,
I'm sure
yeah.
there's like a sexy nun that you'll find. But what was it? What did that? Oh, the Princess Bride thing. So we'll put a picture of, I'll find a picture of myself that looks the most like, because I don't have a picture of me in the costume.
Did you
but
do like that? Didn't like, you have like a goat?
I did
like
a
the facial hair
thin
thingy.
Mustache, and
right.
a little bit of like a scruff with like a stippling brush.
Okay, now I'm picturing it and I can kind of see it.
Yeah, if like I had a black mask on.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure.
I love that you drew from the Princess Bride like every little girl's dream to be the princess, but you went for the frickin'.
For sure.
You
Same
went for
with
the
like,
dude. And
pretty
I
much
love
anything
that.
Like that. Like, wouldn't you rather wear those like high pirate boots than like some.
Way more
gown?
Comfortable, by the
right?
way.
And easy, yeah, easy to navigate the streets of wherever you are.
Oh, yeah. I think it's just where I found myself when I moved here and started going out. I was always like. ending up at some, you know, cheese ball party where I knew everybody would just, but then again, thinking, you know, dressed like a whore. So I thought, okay, well, I'll just whore it out.
That's what's expected.
And by
of
the
me.
Way, because also I.
Just so funny because there, you have the face of, you really do have the face of a nun. Like you have the face of an angel. You have the face of an angel.
I'm a really conservative dresser in life. Yeah. So I guess in a way it was also like my license to be like, ooh, I'm going to wear a short skirt.
Yeah.
And not be concerned about it.
Yeah.
But maybe that was why. But I have to say the past couple of years, I just like, I'll just go to a vintage shop and wear like a really just like old crack whore 70s gown and call it a day.
Do you and Johnny coordinate dressing up?
He tries to. He's really big on that. I'm not so much. I just sort of, you know, do my own thing. And then he stresses out because it doesn't go with his. So then he changes his whole concept.
I always like the idea of a concept costume duo.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a pain to put together. The last really good one was when Chris and I were still together. And there's a picture of this on Facebook because it was like a big deal because we asked, you know, he's got a jillion Twitter followers.
Yeah.
And we asked them to come up with costume mashups for us. So that made sense together. So, or maybe, I don't know, right? They had to make sense together. So because he was Luke Skywalker, Texas Ranger.
Okay.
And I was Goldie Han Solo.
Oh, that's good.
So we took the two, and then we had to like physically represent each.
That's
like,
really clever.
They turned out really well.
Can you send me a picture of that?
I will. It's definitely on Facebook. So I'll make sure that that Jules pulls it up.
Yeah, but that's way more clever than we've ever done. I know.
But it was really fun. Well, it's fun when you turn it over to other people who are smarter and cooler than you. Like, everything I ever ask my fans about, they always come up with something cooler than I could have come up with on my own.
Okay, that's a good idea. So, maybe I'll do that for this. Well, last year we were sailors in New Orleans. We went to New Orleans, which is
fun. What kind of sailor outfit? Just like a big bib? Kind of like an old school, like
Popeye era? I was a hoary sailor. I'm going back to it again. Because it was $20 at Hollywood Costume.
What was hoary about it?
It was a short skirt. Although any part
I've
that
never
would be
used
exposed,
the word hoary more ever in my life.
I put a thermal under it. A, so I could stay warm, and B, because I'm conservative in dress. So I thought it was a bit low cut. So the thermal sort of covered that. And then I went to like a stripper shop on Hollywood next door to the costume place and just got some like boots and white fishnets, under which I wore another pair of tights because those were too revealing. And
then cutting yourself off at every turn for the exact purpose of what the costume is supposed to be.
And then Johnny was in like a very ill-fitting, you know, sailor costume, but both of them came in a plastic bag,
right?
So you know it was not creative. But the best,
by the way, it's
not
even a good plastic bag. It's like a sad, crackly plastic bag that, like, the second you open it with the snaps, it just sort of that disintegrates.
Yeah, you smell the must as you open the package. But the best ones I saw, the best one I did see in New Orleans, because New Orleans is just amazing.
Does New Orleans remind you of Montreal at all? I've never been to Montreal, but
yeah, it's funny that you asked that. A little bit. Well, they say that it really started that the people of New Orleans are people.
That's why it suddenly occurred to me that maybe that would be like a connection.
Cajun
for
is
you.
Sort of it's sort of a twisted French Canadian.
Yeah.
I think there's something about that city. First of all, Montreal is my, you know, it's just, I know it's my hometown, but I feel such a connection to it. And New Orleans, there's like a darkness to New Orleans that I really like. I like that it's a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it, you know, gets back up after being knocked down constantly.
Yeah.
I like that it has a history and it's got a grit to it that I really appreciate.
It's fun to hear about that from people who love it. I've only been once, and I really enjoyed my time there, but I never felt the click that I know, that passionate love that people have for the city.
Yeah.
I didn't get there, and it's not to say that I wouldn't have gotten there.
How
I was
long
working.
Were you there?
I was only there like a week.
Okay.
And I was working every day.
Yeah.
And I was there in the summer.
I think
it was
you
really
need to
hot.
Be with locals, too, to just to see their side of it, because yeah. I'll, you know, if not, then you're sort of walking aimlessly around. It's the same thing with Montreal. You're either walking around the French Quarter, like up and down Bourbon, which I avoid at all costs, or in Montreal, you're only seeing Old Montreal, which is absolutely stunning and you should absolutely head there first, but that's not all the city has to offer.
Right.
I'd love to take you there too and just kind of show you, you know, take you to the best places to eat. And
yeah. I went to like an area where there was great vintage shops and some really great cafes, and I loved it. I mean, I really did love that. And I loved the houses around there.
Yeah.
And I was staying in the French Corner, the French Quarter, which was super charming. I think I was just working too much. And
yeah.
It was one of those shoots where you like red eye in from another job, do that, and then red eye back and work the same day as you flew, kind of thing. And
yeah.
I think I was just fried.
That's a hard city to work in too, because it's all about a complete release. And I like that about that too, because I tend to go all or nothing.
Right.
The way I conduct my life is when I'm working, I'm so hyper disciplined. And then when I'm off, I go hard. I mean, I go to every restaurant. I, you know, bottle of wine after bottle of wine. And it's just, it's always been how I am. It's all or nothing. I work hard. I play hard. And I think that city is very conducive to that.
How early did you start working from when you were in high school in Montreal?
I guess acting.
I'm not, by the way, she was not a streetwalker. About to like uncover some sort of.
Well, my first love, of course, as you know, was prostitution.
The amount of times we said whore. I mean, yeah. I may as well have been, I guess, at this point.
I don't know how feminist it is of us to have continued to use that word, but that's a struggle
right.
I have on every podcast.
I'm a giant feminist, for the record, too.
But we are talking about terrible Halloween costumes.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, not about people right. specifically.
Right.
Just about me being uninventive in cheap Halloween costume. Well, what do you mean, like professionally?
Yeah, because I just feel like you've been on television forever.
And, well, I guess I kind of have. I started on TV.
I mean, did you have a normal kind of high school experience where you were?
Oh yeah,
dating boys and
no dating,
no dating,
no. I was so shy. Oh God, I was
really
painfully shy. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
I can't wait to see pictures of you from high school, because you're going to have to provide one for the podcast.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Gotta
come
up with one.
Oh God. I don't, you know, I was looking at my my yearbook the other day, and the picture I selected for the yearbook is so serious.
Oh, yeah?
And I remember my dad saying, honey, use the one with the cute little, you know, half smile smirk that you do.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, Dad, no, I'm going to really take the serious one. And
I got to make my mark in this yearbook.
Oh, God, and it doesn't even look serious. I look melancholy.
Oh,
I know.
I hope we can come up with that.
So I guess I start, no, very normal high school, you know, very shy. But when I was 12 or 13, I took it upon myself to like go to, I found like a community theater type class without telling my parents.
Did they offer any kind of like acting and stuff inside the high school?
There was drama class. We had a great drama class, but I wanted to do something in addition to.
Okay.
And I felt a connection to that. And I also was so shy that I needed something. I tend to tackle things head on that I'm afraid of. So I found this community theater class, and I signed myself up. And then
where does that come from? This idea of tackling something. I mean, at that age, I mean, I guess a lot of kids are more fearless. I certainly was fearless about certain things when I was that age, but I don't know that I had the self-awareness and the fortitude to recognize a fear and combat it.
Right.
I don't know that I could have, I don't think that like what I was being fearless about was necessarily the thing I was really afraid of that I wanted really badly. I think I was just, I don't know, that's really mature. Right.
And, I mean, I definitely was an old lady soul.
Yeah.
I was.
Is your mom like that? Is your dad like that?
My mom is not. My mom is a very, the complete opposite, young soul, almost like naive, like shockingly naive in an incredibly sweet way.
Did you sense that when you were a kid?
Did you
sort of develop?
I think our roles reversed.
Because you need to develop, yeah.
Yeah. I think at 13, it definitely sort of started to make that switcheroo.
Yeah.
my dad and I were incredibly close at that point. I was living with him.
Okay.
And so, yes, he's
brothers and sisters?
No.
Yeah.
Just like you.
I have to ask questions like I don't know the answers.
I love when I meet.
Yeah, we both lived with our dads.
Only children. Mm-hmm. There's not that. I feel like there's not that many of us.
I agree.
Especially here, for some reason, in LA.
True.
So I always have
you'd
this
think
kinship.
This whole thing, but based on the stigma attached to only children, you'd think that LA would be a city of only children.
Yeah.
Not the case.
I know. So that's funny. But no, you're right about the only child thing. You'd think LA would be full of them. But no, I just was a really old soul. And I knew that it was something that I needed.
Yeah.
And I also was very keen on pretending. I loved, you know, only children. We were big pretenders. And I really dug that.
And your dad was in an apartment?
Yeah.
Did you have like places that you sort of secret places to yourself that you could go and kind of just...
Top
imagine
shelf
and be
top shelf of the linen closet.
Oh,
yep. Yeah, weird.
I love that.
It was my spot.
Gotta find your little spots.
Yeah,
wherever you can.
Well, the day I couldn't fit up there was a very sad day.
You'd probably like a dumbwaiter. It'd be like top shelf, but also an elevator.
It's perfect.
We got to get you into a dumbwaiter.
I'm telling
stat.
You, I would build that right now. Oh. I need my quiet time, honey. I need my quiet time.
I'm going and
go to my dumbwaiter.
A dumbwaiter. I feel like a dumbwaiter factors into so many children's books and adventures, and yet I've never seen a real dumbwaiter, I don't think.
You haven't?
I don't know. It seems it's very...
I've seen one. I've seen one.
You haven't lived till you've seen the inside of a dumbwaiter, Jenny. Guys. Why is it called a dumbwaiter?
Well, maybe... I don't know, actually. Do you know what? Don't do this to me, because Johnny always says... that I will answer any question whether I know the answer or not. So I'm going to say, you know why?
I like this because I'm going to come up with an answer that's probably the same as yours.
Like, I would much rather make something up than say I don't know. Well, the reason why I do is because back when a waiter couldn't figure out how to get up the stairs, he would just sort of use this thing and lever it. It was just easier for those dumb waiters out there. Who,
fantastic.
You like that?
I do. Unfortunately, that's
like
not the reason it's called a dumbwaiter. It is. We are playing Balderdash right now. The reason that it is called a dumbwaiter, Jen,
okay,
is actually, it's similar, but it is, the reason is that it...
She can't even get it out.
How much more time can I buy for myself while I try to think of a different reason? The reason is that
I win because I didn't take any time.
It was a way of transferring things from floor to floor, obviously the way a waiter would, but you can't have a conversation with it because it doesn't have a voice. So you're thinking of it as dumb, like stupid, but it's actually that it's a dumb waiter.
Dumb,
like
right.
You
it
can't ask it any questions or place any orders and have anything answer back to you, but it does... principally the same thing that a waiter does, which is like lift and lower stuff.
Okay. First of all, you took way too much time to come up with that answer.
That is so true.
Secondly, you incorporated my answer into it. So I win.
100%. No argument coming from me. No argument coming from me. Oh my God.
Anyway.
You had to wait too long for the answer, and my answer was dumb.
So
that's the dumb waiter. That's the dumb waiter right there.
We both lose.
I totally get that. And one of the things that I miss most about being a kid, and one of the reasons that when I think about like wanting to have kids, and this is a terrible reason to have kids because obviously life is difficult when you raise children and there's a lot of challenges to it too. But that sense of wonder about the simplest, smallest places and things, I loved the alleyways near my dad's, just in my dad's neighborhood, the alleys, because they were so ill-kept that they were full of like grass and weeds and like broken bricks and reeds that grew up from God knows what. And they were just like, they were poorly maintained because they weren't used for anything.
Yeah.
And so to me, that was like a wonderland able to be stuck in between the backyard walls of people. Like, this is all the people's houses. This is all the people's houses. And I'm just living in between that.
Yeah.
In my little play area where I'm just like, you know, yeah. pretending whatever I'm pretending. The podcast listeners know more often than not, I was pretending to be Anne of Green Gables. But
Canadian.
This I know. And I've never been to PEI either.
Oh, you need to make that little pilgrimage.
I'm furious with myself for the things I've not done yet. but yeah, that's those spaces as an only child, especially.
Yeah.
I didn't even seek out. I had plenty of friends, but I didn't. Mostly one-on-one friends. I don't know if that's true for you, too.
Oh, yeah. My best friend and oldest friend, who continues to be my best and oldest friend. We just call each other sisters at this point. But she's an only child. And my God, the games we would invent. She lived in an apartment on the same street. And I would bike up there. And we would, I mean, just two crazy kids. We would have, first of all, our survival fanny packs, which I packed. And I was very detail oriented. I mean, it included a package of Swedish berries always.
I love Swedish berries. Paper and Swedish clip. Fish.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, paper clips, Band-Aids, obviously, and Neosporin.
I love this
which
kit.
I never travel without Neosporin to this day.
This
and
is
Band-Aids,
wonderful.
For that matter. And then we would have our notepads, and we would sit in the lobby, sometimes hide behind the lobby furniture. And we would observe the people coming in and out of the building and write notes on them and stories about them. And we would make up like elaborate stories, but dramatic. And we were these sort of two detectives. It's really weird, right?
No, this is what you're describing sounds like every single book that I was crazy about that I read over and over and over and dog-eared all the pages when I was that exact age, which is like Harriet the Spy.
Yeah.
And from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil Frankweiler, where these kids go and they live in the Natural History Museum. They run away from home, pack up like a great pack, kits and stuff, and they hide away and live inside the Natural History Museum. Is it Smithsonian or the Natural History Museum?
What is it called?
Smithsonian, I think. No, I don't know. From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler.
Okay.
And then all the Zelpha Keatley Snyder books where all of these kids are having these like amazing adventures and they're so imaginative. What you described to me sounds like a children's book. Like a young adult book. Like a really great...
It's so funny. Well, I was obsessed with horror movies, so I always got really like gruesome with the stories. Like killed his wife. He killed his wife.
What horror movies?
Oh God, everything. I would torture.
Did you see
all
it too?
Friends.
Did you see stuff too young?
Oh yeah, my dad.
But you still loved it, so obviously it didn't do that much damage.
Well, I'm sure it did some because I'm so fearful now. Even though I still torture myself and loved. That's the thing I like most about Halloween is the movies that come on, and I just shut myself in with Johnny, and we just watch, and then I don't sleep for days. But no, I remember I would have sleepovers, and I would make everyone watch the horror movies. And I just remember one time, one of the poor girls that I made watch something just completely inappropriate for like a bunch of 9-year-olds. It was probably like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Horrible. We'll talk about this in a second.
Like, why would I was obsessed with horror movies. Yeah. And I remember it was like really late for us. We were probably 8. It was probably 11 p.m. And she literally like got out, like walked out of the room and ran up to my mom and said, "Call my mother, I'm going home."
Oh.
And her mother came and picked her up because she was hysterically bawling because I had made her watch the movie.
Okay, I had a few of those for sure slumber parties where I watched stuff that scared the shit out of me, and then it felt like I was the only one left awake. Everybody else was asleep. But I kind of loved them too. Like, I really had a mixed experience with that. But I definitely remember one time I was at a sleepover and we watched The Birds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I
and
love.
And then my sleeping bag was right next to the chimney.
Oh, my God.
So I was convinced that, like, birds were going to come out and peck my eyes out.
Oh, no.
I also, my mom, when my dad must have been traveling or he was probably traveling writing a book or something. And my mom had to leave to go out of town for some reason. And she... I'm sure it was someone through the church, because the church, like, they take care of their own, which is great, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, basically I think that she just like found someone who would let me stay that night there, and it was not people I knew. So it was a mom and her daughter, and it might have been a friend of my mom's, but I did not know her at all, and I did not know her daughter, and I'd never been there before.
And I think for personalities like us, that's very difficult, very unpleasant.
Good. No good. Just to be dumped off at someone's house you've never been to stay the night. Like, good night.
No.
With strangers?
No.
On top of which, her daughter was a little older than me, and she showed me Poltergeist.
Oh, God. That's one of the worst.
Which had just come out. Like,
the clown doll. Don't even get me started on clowns.
It was horrifying.
Oh, it's still horrifying.
It's scary. It's a great scary movie. Yeah. It's funny too. It's
That's
really, really
traumatic.
Good movie. It was really, really scary to the point where, I mean, we joke and we say it was traumatic. I think it might have actually been traumatic, but I do love horror movies. I feel like it's traumatic probably in ways I don't know.
I'm still afraid of clowns. I'll tell
I
you
definitely
that much.
Don't feel that. And Stephen King's It was definitely super terrifying clown-wise.
I think that
clown-wise.
Very skinny elderly men in black suits are a little frightening.
Like Kane from the Poltergeist 2?
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Poltergeist 2.
Yeah.
The Poltergeist 2 was so bad it didn't even deserve us to be scared of it. But we were anyway.
Know.
But
wait,
here's
there was one.
This is what I was going to say about Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh no, please!
No, there's
you're
one called Burnt Offerings, which is maybe
I've never seen it.
One of the worst. Worst. It's
I feel
so,
like I've heard of it as being one of the worst movies.
I mean, it's hard to find. It's kind of obscure, but it's. I don't know why my mom. The only thing that's good about it is that Bette Davis is in it.
Okay.
But other than that, it's like just the worst. It's laughable.
Oh my God, you just made me think of a movie.
Really?
Sorry. Watcher in the Woods. Did you ever see that?
I feel like I probably did.
Bette Davis is in that also.
Really? Okay, yeah, I did see that.
It's a Disney
I know
movie.
Ooh, I think I need to see it again.
I just freaked myself out. It's a kid's movie, so it's not, but it's like genuinely, I remember it as being like really scary.
Yeah.
Guys, everyone, don't let me forget Watcher in the Woods.
Okay,
tweet me.
Remind
me Watcher in the Woods. Okay.
Yeah, remind me at the end because okay. I actually want to rent that.
Okay. We're going to rent that.
But that one, please rent Burnt Offerings. It's almost laughable, but there's a limo driver in it who, he drives. No, it's not a limo. I'm sorry. A hearse driver.
Of course.
And
of course you would get those confused.
That explains that really creepy vehicle I took to the award shows last year.
A hoary hearse. It's like a hearse whore.
Oh, you could fit a hot tub so much easier,
right?
But there's this one limo hearse driver, and he's so great. Did it again. He's so creepy, and he always comes in with this really. It's the music, I think, that gets me. And then he drives in, and he smiles. He always smiles. And he's got these dimples and that like chin dimple thing.
Oh, the chin dimple.
And it used to kill my best friend and I. I mean, literally, just freak the crap out of us. So yeah, look that one up. Burnt offerings. Yeah,
Watcher in the Woods is it's weird. The thing about Watcher in the Woods that I love so much is because I loved horror movies, but I was way more obsessed with like the occult and ESP and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like my friend Martha and I
did you do Ouija board?
We did Ouija board for sure.
Yeah.
But I think also I had a lot of friends where we didn't have the conventional ways to get creeped out like that. So we would make stuff up. So Martha and I, and I think I hope she still listens to the podcast. Hi, Martha. was one of my best friends starting in fifth grade. And we would, both at my house and at her house, and her parents live out in the desert up against this beautiful mountain. And the only issue I have, and I think she knows this because she's had experiences with this, is that her parents always left the doors open and stuff.
Oh,
like,
God.
It was just very safe. But what it wasn't safe from was desert bugs, which are, like, the worst. So
what do they look like?
She got stung by a scorpion in
bed. What?
In her bed. There's tarantulas are fine, but like they're still scary looking. Wolf spiders.
Tarantulas are not fine.
Brown recluses, black widows. Like this desert is basically made to kill you.
Oh,
Everything in the desert is like made to kill you. So bless her heart. She definitely had like a lot of bug encounters, but she's probably a lot better with bugs than I am just from exposure
therapy.
Scorpion
in your bed?
Scorpion in your bed.
I'm not going to sleep tonight. Thank you.
Scorpion in your bed.
I mean, I always have to have something like in my ears. Like when I'm sleeping, because my hair has to be covered in my ears.
Oh, you're giving me so many willies right now.
I know, because my...
So we would like stay up all night and we had this, like there were a few different things that would happen. A lot of it was like, it sounds like we were high, but we were just little kids who were enthusiastic and then very
also,
overtired.
You were high.
But we love that feeling of when you're so overtired, you're like wonked out. That feeling of where, first of all, everything becomes really funny because you're so tired. I just burped. And second of all, I think we had convinced ourselves that we were more like, you're more open to like whatever when you're really tired. You're more open to your brain doing whatever it can do than it during the day. You're just guarded and you feel like, I know how my brain works. I know what I'm capable of. We're like, let's just like get loose. Like we're really tired. Maybe we'll be able to like unlock something in our minds. So we would like put a rubber ball down on the ground and we'd be like, we're so tired. We're just going to relax our minds.
Oh my God.
And we're going to move that ball across the room. Whoa.
And we, and then you get so tired that you kind of hallucinate and like, think maybe you did.
Just moved.
I mean, we could spend hours doing stuff like that. I love the whole ESP and the whole thing. And the point is that Watcher in the Woods is more about stuff like that. It was like, there's this, like Betty Davis's daughter, Karen, is like, she was missing, but this girl who moves into this very kind of scary, haunted, spooky mansion keeps seeing reflections of this girl in the mirror, and she's got a blindfold on, white blindfold, and she's clearly terrified and trapped.
I've seen that.
And we don't know where she is or what happened, and it turns out she's trapped in another dimension. Ooh. And that's very... That's complicated.
Yeah.
That's a complicated concept for a scary movie for kids as a Disney movie.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just watched it over and over and over and over again. And I just loved how creepy it was. That and Candleshoe. Man, Candleshoe is still like one of my all-time favorite movies. Oh, my God. It's so good. It's not a scary movie. Not a scary movie. It is a story. It is a movie about, it stars Jodie Foster. She plays this kind of like, at her absolute tomboyish best.
Aww.
Like that 13, 14-year-old where like she's just so clearly uncomfortable in girls' clothes. Like she's mostly just wearing flannels and jeans and sneakers. It's the 70s, so she's got her hair all raggedy in her face. And I think she'd gotten her, either she had braces or she had braces in Freaky Friday. And I'm getting confused and she didn't actually have braces in real life. But anyway, she plays this American, like basically... like a street urchin, essentially. She's just like kind of a scab, you know, she's like a messed up, troubled kid. And somehow somebody finds her and thinks that she has like the same birthmark that makes her potentially the heir to this British estate in England. And they take her there. They basically groom her to make her, they're like, we're going to pull the wool over this old lady's eyes and you'll get a cut of it or whatever.
Oh,
and she'll think you're the granddaughter. So they train her to be like the granddaughter that this sweet old British woman is missing, because this little girl went missing forever ago. And then it's this whole story of how they take her to like, you know, try to claim this estate. But this sweet old lady, why am I blanking? It's Helen... gosh, she's amazing. It's like Dame Helen something. She's just one of the most amazing British actresses ever. Helen,
not Helen Mirren.
No, it's like Helen Hayes, maybe.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
And what's his name is in it? David. I can't believe I'm blanking on these names. It's just because I worked a full day.
David
guys.
Niven.
Yes, David Niven. Wow, yeah. Thank you.
I'm an old movie person.
I couldn't love David Niven more. Yeah. I'm ashamed of myself. Yeah. Then you'll love this movie.
Okay.
So anyway, she goes to... I can't believe we're using the podcast for us to talk about movies. She goes to... she goes to Candleshoe, is I think the name of the state, I guess. She goes there. She's like, yeah, she's like trying. She's like, yeah, I guess I must be your granddaughter or whatever. But she's like really rough around the edges. And a bunch of little British orphans have been living with her, taking care of the estate and stuff. And they hate her. But then like, are they going to get along? And then they're looking for this treasure. It is awesome.
Okay, that looks
it's
good.
Such a great children's film.
Okay.
It totally holds up. it's charming. It's adorable. I really honestly argue that there's something for everyone.
Oh, I feel like we need to like make some popcorn and
we have to watch something
together.
Scary. We'll watch Watcher in the Woods, we'll watch Candleshoe, but Nightmare on Elm Street, and then I promise we'll stop talking about movies, but Nightmare on Elm Street was a movie where I was so afraid. I heard about what it was about and that's all it took.
Yeah,
I had nightmares about the idea of dying in your dreams to the point where I blew the real movie away with my, you know what I'm saying? By the time I finally saw the movie, I was like, oh, this is nothing.
Oh my God.
I was still scary, but I had,
the
I
one
don't
in
know,
your head
like the one in my
so
head was
scary.
So real and so scary that I had nightmares about the idea of the movie of Nightmare on Elm Street.
So funny. Without even seeing it.
Oh my God.
Wow. Well, that's an only child thing too. We're very good in our imaginations.
Too good.
Yeah.
Some would argue too good.
Too good.
So you, listen, by the way, we're almost out of time. So you enrolled in community theater.
Yeah.
We barely got into your high school years. What kind of plays did you do in community theater? Was it fun to be with? I think I've had a couple of other guests who did community theater also, and I always wonder if was it cool to sort of be with a bunch of different ages rather than like a bunch of kids all playing adults.
adults.
It was like, I think it was a, you know, the, it capped at like 17. So it was a lot of younger kids. Oh,
okay. But I didn't know if it was like the baker's in it and he's playing King Lear.
No. I mean, it was, you know, it was just a lot of sort of misfit kids that just needed an outlet, and we would write our own plays. And I remember one play we wrote was called The Court of Queen Caractacus.
Oh.
And it was a comedy, and I was the queen. And we, I mean, they advertised it around the town that I grew up in, or the suburb that I grew up in. And it was a packed house. It was City Hall, and it was a packed house. And I remember the audience really laughing. And I was like, this is... Okay, this is completely addictive. Completely addictive. And from somebody who was so awkward, like, I still to this day cannot public speak. I mean, just horrifying to me. If you ask anyone that went to school with me, I would turn 7 shades of purple and sweating, so that for you, shaking, there is that difference stuttering.
Between being, because you were saying that before we started the podcast, like this idea of me being live as myself every day to viewers rather than being able to like disappear into a character and be shot on film or be in a play where there's like a structure, a beginning, middle, and end. And
yeah. It's very, it was
play you were in that I went and saw that Megan Mullally was in and stuff. Oh, you were so good.
Oh, thanks. I loved doing that. It was so good to be doing theater again. Yeah. And I missed that, but
you're
it was
so good at it.
Thank you. It was, but yeah, that was just a taste for me. And I loved how comfortable I felt up there. I couldn't believe how comfortable I felt up there.
What a revelation, right? Yeah. For being somebody who's shy.
Yeah. I remember the nuns growing up in elementary, like they kept asking my mom if I actually spoke because I just never said a word. But then in high school, that kind of changed. I was a bit of a smart ass. But still, when it came to public speaking, I just couldn't. And then we have a thing called Cégep in Montreal, or in Quebec, that is after high school. So it's basically grade 12 and 13 prepping you for university.
Okay.
So I went to that, which was the first time I'd ever been in classrooms with guys.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Talk about shy. Like then I really couldn't say anything. And then I was, you know, getting attention from some of these guys and so embarrassed, so shy, so awkward for the first year. Then I got my groove, you know.
Then you got your groove.
But man, I was a mess. I was a mess. And I'm a pretty outspoken person. And so, and especially being growing up in girl schools, you really get a confidence in yourself that I really appreciated. Like, I think.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, I did. I think I've talked about this before because I had done this segment on segregation in schools on HuffPost, and because there are some public schools who are segregating their kids for certain classes, which I've very conflicted feelings. You know what? I don't even have conflicted feelings about it. I understand.
What do you mean, like impetus. A sex ed or something?
No, I mean like math.
What?
Like math class for boys and math class
for
girls.
Weird. That's weird.
Right?
To me.
It's weird. It's like if you're either in a co-ed school or you're not.
Listen, if you're talking about what you're sex just saying ed about, and kids are awkward around each other talking about sex, that I would understand. We're talking about numbers.
But there's a whole argument behind it that I'll get into with you offline. But but I agree with you. But there is evidence to support the reason for doing this. I mean, it's not just happening willy-nilly. But what you just said about this idea of the confidence that being at this all-girls school built, I mean, that kind of stuff, it's an entirely different experience than I had at public school. And I'm fiercely defensive of how important I think it is for boys and girls to be together.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I'm just talking about
my
own experience.
But you know what? I definitely would agree with you when I got to Cégep and could not utter a word in class because there were boys there and I was so shy and I've just, you know, I was a mess. So yeah, that would be, look, I'm on the fence. Yeah. I'm on the fence.
You're on the fence. We don't have to decide this tonight, but, okay. And so, college or straight into working?
University. I was accepted into communications and I was really psyched about that. It was a really small group of people. And I was loving it, but that's when I got an agent and started going out for TV.
It was in Montreal.
Oh, yeah. And I got the third thing or maybe the first. I don't know. I got work quickly.
Yeah.
And I remember my first on-screen line, which was a Nickelodeon show, an American show. And after, the producer ran up to me and said, please stop saying a boat. It's about...
That's their fault for shooting in Canada.
I know. But my first on-screen line was, it was a murder mystery show. I know.
You love this.
So appropriate.
What was the show called?
It was called The Mystery Files of Shelby Woo. And it was with Pat Morita. And sort of, it was like an Asian Nancy Drew.
How cute is that?
It was really cute.
I've never heard of it.
Well, most people haven't. But Pat Morita was absolutely lovely. And it was, I was, you know, I'm like 18 and there's Mr. Miyagi.
Sure.
That's big stuff. But my first on-screen line was, I know who did it. I played like a cheerleader that wore a string of pearls. That much I remember.
Like a preppy cheerleader who wore pearls.
And my first line was, I know who did it. Delivered not much better than that.
Uh-huh.
Probably worse. And this was before I had seen Michael Caine on Acting, the video that taught me everything I needed to know for my first week on set.
I have a problem because I've never seen it.
Oh, so my God, you haven't?
Still don't know how to act.
Honey, everyone, rent it. It's
okay.
But it's so fantastic. Okay. I mean, he's intense. But anyway, I said the first line. It was the first take of me ever being on a set before. And I looked directly down the... I'm sorry. Let me preface it with, I walked to the mark, looked down at the mark to make sure I was standing on the right at the right spot for the camera to get me, then looked completely directly down the barrel of the camera.
I love it.
And said my line.
I love it.
And I just remember cut, and the director ever so delicately coming up to me and saying, Jen, you know, when you say the line, you want to say it to the person, not directly into the camera.
Listen, if you were doing a commercial, you might be in good shape.
Learn it on the job,
I
people.
Know who did it. Tide Stainstick did it. It fixed my cheerleader skirt.
Oh, my God. But I was so lucky to learn on the job from these people who were so kind.
That's adorable. Yeah. And then when did you end up on the soap opera?
I'd worked a bunch in Montreal and Toronto. I was going back and forth and had no plans to come to LA, but my mom worked for Delta for 27 years, and she was booking a flight for this guy, and she never talked about me, but this guy was calling from LA and he was booking a flight, and there was a reservations office in Montreal, which is where she worked. And he just kept talking about the business. And, oh, yeah, you know, he's very fancy. And my mom finally just interjected with, I kind of know what you're talking about. My daughter is actually an actress here. And he said, really? Well, why don't you send me her, you know, like a tape of some of her work and I'll give it to a manager, you know? And he could have been,
yeah,
you know, a mess.
It's so amazing. It's so amazing. These things that, these small things that happen.
Yeah.
These little connections that happen that spark off like a whole giant things.
Yeah. And she came home and she said, we don't have to do this. I don't know him from Adam, but you just put a reel together and I can FedEx it to him and see what happens. She's like, what's the worst that can happen? And I said, absolutely. And I sent it. And then a few days later, this female manager, this woman called me and said, I saw your tape. Would you ever come visit? And we got free airplane tickets because of my mom. So I said, yeah, I'll be there next week. And then she said, okay, before you come to meet me, I'm in Beverly Hills, rent your car at LAX. And I was too young, so my mom had to be with me. And drive to CBS on Fairfax and Beverly and just audition for this soap. Just for fun. I just want to see how you audition.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I'd never seen it. I wasn't a big soap fan. But I remember getting to CBS and I walked to the audition and I walked right by the Price is Right wheel, which I still have pictures.
Awesome.
Geeking out in front of the friggin' wheel.
I love it.
And that was kind of it.
And wow.
Then, like, cut to, you know, 2 months
meant
later,
to be.
I'm living in L.A. Yeah.
Old soul that's meant to be.
Yeah. Old lady soul.
It brought you to me. Like, I was just sitting here waiting for that to happen. All right. We are at over an hour. I'm going to tell you it's 10:45.
We can edit out all that movie stuff.
Oh, nope. It's all staying in. I just haven't eaten dinner, so I'm really getting excited to eat. And then I'm going to go to bed. But this has been a pleasure. I told you it would fly by.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
We covered a lot of ground.
When's part two?
P2 could happen anytime. We have a lot to discuss about the Halloween walk in our neighborhood.
Mm.
And,
I mean, yeah, I would promo the show, but it's not on until February.
But say what it is anyway.
Oh, it's a new David Kelly show for TNT, and it's called Monday Mornings. And it's going to be good.
It's going to be really
great. I play
great.
A brain surgeon. Wait, it's not that funny.
You're very, very smart. I only laugh because of the way you said brain surgeon.
I'm playing a brain surgeon.
Yes.
I said like an old Jewish lady. Like,
yes, you did.
She'd be holding like a cigarette.
I will say for the record, and I'm sure you've understood this as listeners, that she is one of the few people that I would say is actually going to be convincing as a brain surgeon. You can't say that about many beautiful women on television. That's a terrible thing to say. And I'm not saying that they don't exist, because they do. But I think sometimes casting happens where they choose to not cast someone who is convincing as an intellect. It has nothing to do with, you can be beautiful and be smart. You can be not beautiful and be smart. You can be smart and this girl is proof. Whatever. But they did a good job with you.
Well, thank you. You are one of the most, honestly, prettiest and smartest gals I know. So
the fact that you said gals fills me with joy.
I had you. Gal.
Listen, we're just a couple of gals.
We're just a couple of gals reading Domino magazine over here.
The couple of gals are going to put down their wine glasses, pick up the Domino, talk the night away. I may
put on a Bette Davis film.
You wouldn't possibly. You couldn't.
I'm going to put on a picture.
You wouldn't. You couldn't. Hold on. I got to get my dressing gown on. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Jen, thank you so much. This has been in the making for a long time, so I'm very glad that this worked out, and I adore you.
Me too.
Bye, everybody. Bye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.